Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. I want you to know that I am so glad to be back here today after a week off due to the American holiday. The American Revolution founded Toronto. I'll tell you about that another time. But I also want you to know that I am not here today for personal pleasure alone. I am here with a purpose to investigate the latest, most advanced recruiting techniques known to the world today. And I want to start off by telling you about a learning experience I myself had just this past week. I have been trying fruitlessly to fill a position for an industrial equipment sales representative. And the main problem is that this role has national responsibilities, and the small-minded people I've been talking to don't want to travel. So I'm not ashamed to tell you, I was stumped. So I bought a book about recruiting. Yes, I did. And here's what it told me. It said, first of all, you've got to have passion. You can't just call a guy up and say, hi, I'm a recruiter. I'm working on a job that might interest you. Do you have time for a chat? And then if he's not interested, you say, thanks, and move on. That's no good. You've got to have the passion of a prophet who starts a revolution in people's minds and helps them see the truth and the beauty of the opportunity that you are revealing to them here today. Now, you may be saying, well, this guy's gone loco. Who am I to argue with the candidate who knows his own business better than I do? Well, the truth is, the candidates don't know what's good for them because in reality, it's the recruiter who sees the big picture. The candidate is so caught up in his daily life that he's too busy to see the forest for the trees. That's the truth. So the solution is not to sell these guys just another job. They've already got a job. What you've got to do is sell them an adventure. But in order to do that, first you've got to wake them up. And to wake them up, you got to bash them over the head with your passion. That's true. And then if you show them the big picture, how this role fits into their careers as a whole, the good guys are going to bite and the bad guys are going to fade away. And that's exactly what you want. So when I catch my breath, I'm going to tell you how I put this plan into action. Here's what happened on my last call. I made a presentation. See, I'm calming down now. Oh boy. I made a presentation to a guy named Bill. He's a salesman with a local territory out on the Canadian prairies. You got to know, that's nowhere. And like everyone in his business, he started in the warehouse, got out of high school. I should mention that. He got out of high school, grade 12, started in the warehouse. He worked his way up through the parts department, then inside sales. And now he's been an outside sales rep maybe for 5 or 10 years. And after I gave him my spiel, here's what he says to me. He says, you know, I've got the product experience you need, but I don't want to travel. And why not? Because he's got young kids and he coaches their hockey team. Well, I got to tell you, you don't know how typical that is. Every sales rep in industrial equipment I spoke to coaches his kids' hockey team. So I said, Bill, you got to face the facts. You're 45 years old. You got no education. You've been with the same company forever, and you're only making $60,000 a year. Really, I said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. And yet here I come, like your fairy godfather, and offer you a place on the national stage. Bill, I said, have you ever heard the saying, God wants to help you, but you've got to meet him halfway? So Bill, he says to me, are you saying you're God? And I said, no, Bill, I'm just a crazy guy who cares about you and cares about his country. Bill, don't you know Canada is in trouble? Every country in the world is competing with us. And how can we be the best, Bill, if guys like you won't step up to the plate when you're called upon to move on to bigger and better things? So Bill says to me, he says, sorry, pal, I got kids. And I say, listen, Bill, listen, I'm a grown-up, so don't kid around with me. Are your kids going to be more happy if you coach their hockey team or if you've got a big wad of money in the bank when you move on to a better world? Face it, Bill, this job is better for you. It's better for your kids. And, Bill, it's better for your country. honestly, I said, it's got to be a crime to say no to me. I ought to have you arrested, Bill. Bill says, I got to go. What a bozo. So I said, okay, Bill, you go. You go, Bill, but remember, I'm a nice guy, and when you come crawling back to me, I'll be here waiting for you, especially if you call in the next 2 weeks. And he says, wait a second. He says, I'm a salesman, too, and you call me up and put me down and expect me to cooperate with you? You got a lot of nerve, mister. You got a lot of nerve. And I say, you know what, Bill? You're wrong again. I don't have a lot of nerve. What you're hearing, Bill, is tough love. Tough love, Bill. That's right, Bill. I love you. And you know why, Bill? You know why? Because I'm not just an ordinary guy. I'm a recruiter, Bill. And in fact, there's something special I want you to know. And I lowered my voice. I'm not just a recruiter. I'm the recruiting animal. And this is a recruiting animal show. And there's no music. So here goes. The werewolf is neither man nor beast, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. And do you expect me, sir, to believe that a man so affected actually becomes a wolf under the influence of a full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves at the age of 6. So, there's no music. I hate that, guys. Anyway, let me see if I can bring it up here. In the meantime, I'm going to tell you a little about my guest today. Today's a different kind of show because I don't know anything about the guest, really. I know just about as much about him as you do, which is I know nothing because he's not famous. He's like almost invisible because he's only been a recruiter for the past 6 months. And you know what? He's not just a recruiter. That's the thing. He's also a recruiting manager. So, I don't know. I was just kind of intrigued. With this guy's background, you'd think recruiting was so easy. You can take on a manager's role even before you place your first person. And I got to bring him on because I need a breath. Let's see if he's here. Noah, are you with us?
How you doing, animal?
Oh, no, I can't take it. I'm out of breath. You got to talk. Tell us a little about yourself. Oh, wait a second. Go ahead.
You have the oxygen tank going over there?
What do you say?
You have the oxygen tank going?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Noah, I got to tell you, I'll talk to the people. Noah told me that he's listened to this show before, but he's never managed to listen to the end. He had a lot of guts to tell me that. Well, Noah, I got to tell you something. I want to ask you, are you going to entertain my guests today? Are you going to talk peppy? Are you going to talk lively? Or are you going to make them fall asleep?
Listen, animal, when you say guests...
I challenge you!
You said guests in plural.
What do you mean?
Well, guests means more than one.
Yeah. You're the guest.
Okay.
You're the guest. Actually, no, you don't have to worry, you know? I brought up so many subtopics today that just in case you run out of steam, I got a lot to talk about. So we got that settled. No, I want to ask you a key question. Noah, do you have passion? Do you have the fire to make your candidate see the vision of success which you as a recruiter can offer?
I think I work with slightly different candidates than you do.
Yeah, really? What kind of candidates do you work with?
Our firm focuses on candidates that have MBAs from the top global programs, and the specific niche that I've carved out for myself is alums.
A little
of
slower.
The...
I can't understand what you're saying. You talk to MBAs. You think I don't talk to MBAs, Noah? You think some industrial equipment sales reps are not MBAs? Of course they are, and they're engineers too. But go ahead. You talked about
my my guys are all coming out of the elite management consulting firms.
Yeah.
The McKinsey's, Bain's, BCG's of the world.
Yeah.
And so these guys not only think that they're mightier than God, but in many cases they actually are.
You know,
they have a pretty good idea where they want to go, and there's no way in hell a recruiter is going to convince them that that's not the direction that they're headed, because for most of these guys they've been planning it since they were 4 or 5.
So that's your first lesson as a recruiter. You can't turn the candidate around. Yes or no?
Oh, I can turn the candidate around, but it's not because I have passion for a position that they have no interest in. It's because I know how to sell. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I'm selling web services or widgets. At this point in time, I'm essentially pimp selling people. And I got to convince him to go home with the candidate, but they're,
I got to point it out. You just contradicted yourself. You said you can't turn these guys around. Or are you saying that passion is not what turns them around?
I can't turn them around, but it's not passion that turns them around.
What turns them around, Noah? You tell us.
These guys are driven by information. The guys I talk to, they want to have, you know, that extra bit of information on analyst oversight for the company they're thinking about joining, on how impactful the role is and what the track is to a line role.
I have the right to cut you off. I'm the host of the show. And listen, I'm going to ask you a behavioral interviewing question. You know what that is, yeah? You know what that is, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Sorry, Noah. You've only been around for a little while. Can you tell us, Noah, the last time you turned a candidate around and got him to look at a job that he didn't want to look at the first time you called?
About 25 minutes ago.
Okay. Give us an example. You leave the names out.
I'm working for a communications company in the Rocky Mountain States.
Yep.
They're looking for a pretty rare breed of a guy who's got an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering with an MBA, experienced one of the elite management consulting firms, and dying to move to the middle of nowhere. I talked to the candidates, and, you know, generally they say to me, if you can give me the exact same position in New York or L.A. or Boston, I'm interested, but I just have absolutely no interest in this geography.
Yep, same problem as mine.
Yeah.
Almost. Mine's travel.
Well, it's different, because yours is
a geography problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you solve that problem? Tell us, what do you say? You can actually give us your script.
The first thing I do is I have a conversation with my client about why he's willing to live in that geography.
Right.
I had my client sell me on his geography. Why would you live there? Why would a person who's coming from a major metro want to go to where you are with their family? And he talked to me about different, neighborhoods in the community, what, type of personality probably enjoys the community, what type of events they have in terms of cultural events, local universities, different, I can't give too much away, but, different things that are relevant for that geography. And I had him arm me with the facts that I need in order to be compelling for a candidate. The
and
number
did he
one
sell
fact,
you? Did he sell
is,
you?
He sold me on the idea that someone who wants to live somewhere other than New York might, be willing to go there.
You wouldn't move there yourself.
But
it's true, isn't it? You're not moving there. But anyway, okay, you don't have to say it online. Go ahead.
The candidate that that I was talking to was originally not convincing it. And the one thing that I said to him was, listen, I've been working with this hiring manager for a while, and the one thing that he's told me that I think makes the most difference is that a lot of people, flick the switch and say no before they have the opportunity to go out there for the on-site interviews. He's never had a candidate get on a plane, go there, and not be interested in the opportunity. And that should tell you something about the people who've actually had a chance, rather than going on some cognitive dissonance about what this, what they think that geography is like, but have actually had the chance to get off the plane, take a look around, look at some houses in the community, go into the headquarters itself and have an opportunity to interact with the corporate culture. Every single one of them has been interested in progressing to the offer stage.
Like, how small is this place? Do they have high-speed internet?
They have high-speed internet, and it's delivered by Camel.
Okay. So you got this guy to turn around that way. Are you telling us yes or no?
Absolutely.
You did. Congratulations. Very good.
Thank you
very much.
How
did you approach him? What do you say when you get on a phone?
This particular candidate, I actually originally targeted with an email.
Yep.
He sent me back an email that basically said, politely, no thanks, based on the geography.
Yep.
So at that point, I didn't need to go in particularly scripted, because picking up the phone, he knew what my name was. He had just sent me an email. He knew why I was calling.
And you believe these guys look at your emails generally. They don't go into spam. You have no fears about that.
I'm less concerned with spam because of the very specific niche that I work with. In
uh-huh.
many cases, I've gotten I've gotten their email addresses off of corporate intranets where they've invited me in because of our firm's track record.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they're willing to take my email, and in many cases, one thing that's very, very unique about the management consulting world is that they're very into development of their employees.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these alumni networks, and they work very closely with a development team, development department, to help their current employees find alternate employment when they decide to leave the firm, which is something that you're not going to find in a lot of other
I have my turn to interrupt. I have recruited in the management consultant area, Noah, but one thing I find, it's really hard to get into those companies. You don't find that at all. You do your own sourcing, yes or no?
I have some candidate developers that work with me, but I do a good share of the sourcing.
Okay,
well.
Candidate development, for me, first there's a sourcer. The sourcer finds a person. The candidate development is done once you got the name, you call the person up, and you get sort of an initial screen of who they are. You present the job. You have different terminology. Am I right?
Correct.
You tell us.
For us, that the candidate developer will make the initial contact.
Who finds a person, Noah?
Candidate developer is doing the sourcing.
Okay.
I source some of my candidates myself, but for a good percentage of the bodies that come in, since I'm mostly focused on the business development and creating the relationship with my clients, it's my candidate developers that are that are pushing a good percentage, probably 65-70% of the candidates up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually make initial contact by email and follow it up with a phone call.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
And that will that comes from the candidate developer. In a candidate where I develop the candidate myself, I'm doing that. In candidates where one of my developers do it, once there's an initial screen in place and there's initial interest, they'll push them along to me for a specific screen as the client manager, who decides whether or not to go ahead with a client submission.
Now, Noah, my music has come online. I always feel better when I can play it. So I'm
go right ahead.
I'm going to play it, and then we'll get into the background questions.
Excellent.
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. And do you expect me to believe that a man so afflicted actually becomes a wolf under the influence of the full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves. At the age of six.
At the age of six. Welcome back, everybody. We've got Noah D. Roth on the line. Now, Noah, let me ask you this. Are you related to Hyman Roth, the famous gangster?
No.
You know who he is?
No.
Okay. Did you see The Godfather?
I did.
Godfather 2, guy who gets shot in the airport?
Ooh, yeah. I didn't put the name together.
He wasn't your grandfather, eh?
No. My grandfather was not in The Godfather. I'm Jewish, not Italian.
Well, so was this guy, Hyman Roth, okay, Meyer Lansky. Anyway, let's move off of that. This is not an ethnically oriented show. It's for everybody. Anyway, let's get into a little background. Exactly, who are you? What do you do? What value are you, Noah D. Roth, bringing us here today? Don't answer yet, Noah. I'll tell you when I want your answer. First, I want to give everybody a little background that I gathered myself. Noah is managing director. Can I say the name of your company? Yes or no?
You can.
Hawks and Peers, a New York City-based search and alliances firm. I've never heard that, Noah. What is a search and alliances firm? Do you place businesses together as well as candidates and employers?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, it's hard to understand why every recruiting firm isn't doing alliances as well. You have high-level executive contacts of major businesses that are confiding information with you about what their strategic needs are and what their business plans entail. And in many cases, you're going to see synergies there. You're going to see introductions that should be made.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to limit that relationship building simply to a vendor relationship as a recruiter when you have the opportunity also to be a strategic part of their business development and corporate development.
Now, Noah, that doesn't sound like something an innocent, naive recruiter could handle, planning strategic alliances between two companies. Something about your background enables you to do it. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Tell me.
Well, I've been in sales and business development since I got out of school.
What's your education?
I have a BS, and that's basically what it amounts to, in marketing from Yeshiva University.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an MBA from Baruch College's Zicklin School of Business, I believe.
So yeah, you got an MBA. That's all I want. So does that make you better placed to work on the Alliance side?
Absolutely not. It's one of the things that I tell people about the MBA. I don't believe that anyone ever got a job because they had an MBA. I think the MBA might be the tiebreaker if you have two equally qualified candidates. What I think the MBA does do is that it's a huge networking bonus. You're sitting in a classroom doing group work with people who are going to be the leaders of business tomorrow, and they're going to take your call because you sat in Dr. Cohn's consumer behavior class one day together in 2000 and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I think that really establishes the value differential between the different types of MBAs. A Harvard MBA is going to have access to a different quality of executive
mm-hmm.
than a Baruch College MBA.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what I learned in the classroom, there were people there who were not business majors undergrad,
yeah.
and so they got a lot out of it. For me, it was, you know, principles of accounting isn't any different when you're in an MBA program than it is when you're
at
a bachelor's.
You're referring to the consulting firms who seem to be your major sources. I don't know if they're your clients as well, but when I recruit people from the consulting firms, they often tell me they want to take an executive MBA, and they're going to try to get their company to send them, and the reason they want to go there is exactly the reason you said. Networking, networking, networking. That's the only value they see in it. Business development. Now, the thing is, though, when I have clients, sometimes they say, I want to see somebody with an MBA. You're saying that that doesn't happen to you. Am I right?
No, the clients, in fact, do say, I want to see someone with an MBA. Yeah. I mean, I'm not dealing with the pre-MBA candidates coming out of the consulting firms. My candidates are all MBA plus.
Uh-huh.
So they have it already. My point is, I think in the real world, except for companies that are stuck up on tracked progressions based on you know, academia plus X years of service.
Yep.
You know, in the real world where people are just walking you into an interview and saying, what can you do for my company?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't run into too many hiring managers in my personal life, in my pre-recruiting life, where the MBA was
let me
more
ask
of an
issue
for them.
Let me know what you told us
before,
right? Let me cut you off. Yeah. Anyway, listen to me. So what you're telling me, I got to move it along, Noah. I told you, I got an audience. Can't let him fall asleep. Got to edit you as we move along. That's a precondition of being a guest on this show. Anyone who's listening and wants to be on, don't forget it. Noah.
It's fine. Listen, one of them fell asleep already, and that's
32%
of your audience.
Yeah. I'm talking. Noah, this is important for me. If I have a hiring manager and he tells me or she tells me that she wants someone who's got an MBA, you're giving me lots of ammo right now to tell them, listen, I got a good candidate who took business as his undergraduate degree. Don't worry about the MBA. That's what you're telling me, right?
Depends on the culture of the organization, but in many cases, absolutely. I'll present.
If I was trying to counter, rebut an argument that they need somebody who's got an MBA, what exactly would I say?
That at the end of the day, they can have hands-on experience that equals or surpasses an MBA. To give you an example, I mean, in the language of the clients I talk to, most of them are looking for candidates coming out of the consulting firms. The consulting firms all have analyst-level positions before pre-MBA and then associate-level positions above MBA. And what you'll wind up seeing is candidates with enough service start getting treated by the consulting firms as associates in some cases without going back to school. Mm-hmm. I've got a candidate I work very closely with who's been at Monitor for 14 years and is an associate partner there.
Yep.
And never went back for his MBA.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me you're not going to look at a guy who's an associate partner at a consulting firm running their media practice because he doesn't have an MBA?
The company, is there a prejudice against people who don't have MBAs?
It's a corporate culture decision. Some firms have that prejudice, and other firms think they have it, and you can talk them out of it.
Okay. I like what you're saying, Noah. So who are your clients if the consulting firms are your sources?
My clients are typically former candidates of our firm. The firm's been around for 25 years, and... you know, there's there's sort of a dichotomy in hiring managers. Some hiring managers specifically value consulting skill sets because they're either consultants themselves or in their corporate culture, consultants are respected. Most other people think that consulting is gambling with house money.
Yeah.
They sort of think of it as very theoretical and don't understand that it's the same type of strategic decision-making that might be done by an internal strategy group.
Mm-hmm.
And so by leveraging clients who are former candidates of ours, who are former consultants themselves, they very much understand the consulting culture. They understand what they're getting from those skill sets, and in many cases they're running corporate development, business development, corporate strategy groups within all sorts of industries. I mean, if you think about where consultants consult, those are the industries they transition into as they leave consulting. So you know, right now I have on my desk a telecom, a consumer credit company, a media company, a pharma company, and I'm working with a semiconductor company.
Uh huh. And these guys, so you're a business development. You're one of the, we haven't come really to your full background in this company yet because it's been around 25 years. You've only been there a short time. But one of your responsibilities is business development. Am I right? Yes or no?
Yes.
And is it exclusively working with your ex-candidates or the people you've placed in companies?
If the ex-candidates are the biggest source of passive clients,
the ones
that come to us.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I do a lot of aggressive business development targeting clients who've never heard of us but match the profile of someone who would like our candidates.
Now, would you be willing to share with us what your technique is in business development with people who don't know you yet?
Absolutely. The first thing I do is find some bait.
Oh, you mean do you market a candidate?
I market a candidate. Yeah. I find a candidate who's willing to let me shop them. And
yep.
I call someone in their industry of expertise.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even know they have a job, or I do know they have a job, and I pretend they don't. And
yep.
I say, listen, I was doing a search for my candidate in Los Angeles, and I happened to run across an excellent pharmaceutical candidate with 3 years of experience at McKinsey, MBA from Harvard Business School. He's been focused exclusively on pharmaceutical engagements for the last 2 years as an engagement manager, and he is looking to transition into industry. Ran into him during my West Coast search, wanted to call you. I figured you might be looking for someone with that profile here in New York. Is this someone you'd be interested in speaking with, or is there someone else you can refer me to who would be interested in speaking with a candidate that has that pedigree and that profile?
You get all that out before they have a chance to say anything?
Yep.
Not bad. You know what? There's a number of people here. Before I continue, I'm just going to ask if anybody wants to put a question or make a statement to Noah. He's a target. Yes or no? Nobody's
got a big bullseye on my back.
Nobody's
and a flame retardant suit on.
Nobody's raising their hand, so I want to go into the background issues.
Can I ask a question?
Pardon me?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, but you got to talk louder, Maureen. What is your stomach making noises?
No, somebody's making a noise. Never mind. I'll hold back.
No, I'd like you to ask. Go ahead.
Please. No, I'd rather hold back. Thanks, Michael.
Did I scare you away?
No, not you.
Okay. You know, I just want you to know, Noah, that is Maureen Shareeb, the queen bee of telephone sourcing.
We've met indirectly during the name sourcing competition.
Oh, okay. Very good. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, tell us something about your background. How did you come to this position? You got out of school with your MBA. What came next?
What came next? I was working for a sports marketing firm in the city.
Uh-huh.
What
was your title?
I started there as a sales manager. I left there as VP of global sales.
So you were sales manager supervising, managing other people without ever having worked before?
Sales manager in a lot of smaller firms is generic for salesperson.
Like territory manager.
Yeah, they bring everyone in at sales manager level.
Right.
And move up from there. They have senior managers. They have
like the schmo managers. I'm trying to recruit from the Saskatchewan, but that's another story. Okay, so you were sales rep, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
and then you became VP sales. Is that VP over yourself, or are you managing other people?
there were a couple of steps in between.
Yeah.
The firm basically focused on, they were officially a publishing firm, but the publishing was just a delivery mechanism for ad sales.
Yep.
And they were doing ad sales in collegiate sporting events. Started out there, they took their collegiate business, bought into another market, which was selling ads in the base directories for all of the military bases in the U.S.
Yep.
And they fell flat on their faces because they tried to copy their sales methodologies one-to-one, and they didn't translate into the new industry.
Uh-huh.
So they asked me to do some trial and error to figure out how to sell using their value proposition in that industry.
Now, was your focus in school on marketing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we turned that business into today. It's a separate P&L that's doing $30 million a year.
And why'd you move on?
They asked me to take on another P&L for them. They got the contract to do the team yearbooks for all the teams in the NFL, NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball. So, again, we had to sort of, take the existing sales methodologies and formulate them into a new market, understand who the buyers were, what the messaging was that spoke to them, and figure out what the price points were, what we had to deliver, and at the end of the day, it's a business that's $100 million today.
So you were very successful at these roles, mm-hmm. And how old were you? You're a young man. You're only 28 years old now. Am I right about that?
You are.
Okay, you can't sue me because I'm not going to hire you. So how old were you when you made this transition from that $30 million P&L to the $100 million P&L, which eventually...
I started working there out of my bachelor's degree. I was doing my MBA simultaneously at night.
Uh-huh.
I worked there for 3.5 years from when I was 21 to when I was 24 and a half.
Really? Uh-huh.
And, it started as a small company. When I got there, there were 50 employees. They were doing $10 million a year. Today they actually bought their prime competition for $100 million. They've got national offices. They're doing pretty well.
And it sounds like you were a major strategic factor in their growth. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what came next? 24 years old.
What came next was September 11th. I was working in Midtown when that happened, and My wife and I sat down and decided that we wanted to decide what was next, and we were both citizens of the U.S. and citizens of Israel, and we decided that we could make personally a bigger impact as two people out of a society of 6 million than two people out of a society of 200 million, and we got on a plane.
Uh-huh.
And we've been here ever since. I've done some work on
this
side
of
the pond, some work over there.
You're in New York.
At the moment, I'm sitting in sunny Beit Shemesh, which is halfway between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv.
You're kidding. What do you know? Okay. So what time is it there?
7:31
p.m. Okay. Thought you were calling me from New York. Okay. So you work in the States. Am I right about that or totally wrong?
I do.
Okay. So when you're making these calls to these consulting people, are you calling from Israel or are you calling from New York?
Some of each.
Okay, so you don't meet your candidate
every other week in New York. My candidates have such high pedigree. In order for them to have made it through Harvard Business School, been selected by one of these consulting firms, not been ferreted out in their first couple of years of being there, these guys aren't going to make a fool of me by the time I put them in front of a candidate.
You don't care how they dress, right? You figure they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I just have to make sure they have the right skill sets and put them in front of the candidate.
Okay, so... How did you come to this company? How did you come to recruiting? Because that's a new thing. What were you doing, actually, between that sporting company, the publishing, and this company?
Well, when I first came to Israel, I was working for IDT Global, which is
You know what? We've got to have a fast overview, because believe it or not, this is going very quickly. Is this interesting to the people listening? Yes or no? Just give me a vote. They don't want to talk. They're very shy, the people who listen to this show. Okay, just tell me, what kind of business were you doing? No details.
Outsourcing. There's a huge community of American expats living here.
Yep.
Imagine getting the same people you would hire in New York for not quite India prices, but a lot less money than it would cost you.
Really? I didn't know that was happening there. Okay. So
we created,
there's
1,000 seats in an outsourcing
business. So what was your title?
I was a VP of Global Sales.
Okay, again, okay. And then how did you come to this company?
My current partner was one of my clients when I was at the outsourcing company. He had scripted things for the recruiting.
He recruited you.
And he was one of my clients when I was there. He tried to recruit me when I left IDT. I went to a technology company instead, and the offer just kept getting better and better, and eventually I couldn't turn him down.
Now, why did he want you?
He wanted me because, you know, at the end of the day, recruiting is sales, and I had, you know, an incredible amount of sales experience. I also had the business background. He had transitioned to some extent more into the alliances side of the business. He was working with a lot of tech startups in generating their initial investment. And he just didn't have the bandwidth to manage the recruiting side of the business as well.
What I want to get to, let me move ahead very quickly, Noah. What I want to get to is you're a new recruiter. You're working at a high level already. How are you different from other recruiters? Because you do seem a bit different.
I hope that's not a bad thing. I'm different in the sense that, I mean, first of all, I have two different responsibilities. I'm not just a recruiter. I'm also, you know, the owner of the P&L over here, so that I have, you know, oversight over all the other recruiters in the firm. I'm making, you know, a lot of the staffing decisions in terms of, you know, not specifically performance related, but in terms of when it's appropriate from a business strategy position to ramp up to a new body in a given area.
Okay, I want to talk about the recruiting, not the management side. That's another topic.
Okay.
In fact,
so from a recruiting perspective, you know, it was a matter of coming in and really learning to transition what I already knew about sales into a new type of sales. If you understand how to address an objection, give a reason to buy, and attempt to close, you know, it really doesn't matter whether you're selling people or widgets. The real difference that I found was that, you know, I said this to you the other day, it's the first time I've ever sold something that can refuse to go home with the guy I sold it to.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, beyond that, being able to, you know, to adjust to the sale on both sides and the, you know, the two cogs working in opposite directions, you know, it boils down to the same, you know, the numbers game, the pipeline.
Yeah, but listen, with your business background, with your business background, are you better able to understand what someone's doing and sell him or her to a client? Yes or no?
I believe so.
Okay.
And I'll tell you another thing. One of the things that I love, there are people in the world that, like, you know, the worst thing that can possibly happen to them is looking for a job.
Yep.
There's nothing I love better than interviewing, because, you know, I'm good at selling a lot of things, but there's nothing I'm better at selling than myself.
Yep.
Usually in interviews, the guy's not cutting me off like you are, so I get fuller answers out. But at the end of the day,
you're not good interviewers. That's not wrong with me. That's wrong with him.
My experience in terms of job searching on the personal level as a non-recruiter, I think gives me some insight. My exposure to different industries, as well as my business background, which is something that I have in common with all of the candidates I'm working with, puts me in a really great position to speak their language.
Let me take a shot at you. I looked at your website, and it says you work by utilizing a cross-industry, function-oriented search approach. I got to tell you, that sounds to me like a fancy pants way of saying you look for people by their job titles in a variety of industries. Am I right about that?
No, because the majority of our candidates are coming out of the consulting firms. When you talk about cross industry, you talk about what industries they're going to, and then obviously there's a cross selling opportunity. If I, you know, part of what I said in terms of bait is true in terms of actual recruiting. If I do a search in LA for, you know, I come up with a candidate who raises his hand and meets all the specs, but he's in New York, I'm not taking that quality candidate and putting him on the side. I'm calling someone in New York and saying, are you interested in this guy?
Yeah, but I don't know. I'd like to take a vote. Cross-industry, function-oriented search approach. I had to figure out, what does that mean? What kind of language is that? You think it sounds good. Am I right? Yes or no?
It's the language spoken by the clients that I'm selling to.
Okay. That's business talk. Is that right? I want to ask you a question. So you are a good salesman by your own affirmation a few minutes ago. You said it yourself. What does it take to be a good salesperson? Is it your personality, or were you schooled to be a good salesperson?
My first job, I took it because of the paycheck, not because I had any particular interest in sales, and then I got lucky and realized I was decent at it.
It's a talent, yes or no?
It's a talent that can only be harnessed with the right training. My first sales trainer was a guy named Mitch Gibbs. He's in the New York area. Look him up, hire him. He's the most incredible sales trainer I've ever worked with. The guy really made me understand that it didn't matter what, that there's a psychology behind selling, that it's, you know, that your responses are very scientific and structured, and that, it's, if you can think on your feet and you've got a pretty good handle on the material that you're likely to be asked, It then just really turns into a numbers game with a fixed closing percentage.
So there's no special skill. You just have to know what you're talking about. Am I right?
You have to know what you're talking about, and you have to know... There are skill sets that are learned, but I don't think there's any personality type that can't do it unless you're, you know, afraid to pick up the phone.
Do you teach selling now?
I'm sorry?
Do you teach selling to your team?
Absolutely.
What do you do? Tell us about that. I'm interested in that. How do you teach someone to sell?
Well, the first thing that you teach them is that, you know, there are structured ways to respond to anything. I mentioned it earlier. There's answer the objection, give a reason to buy, and close. If someone tells me an objection, you know, this candidate doesn't have an MBA, and I explain why his professional experience is equal to an MBA. So I've answered the objection, but I haven't given a reason to buy. I haven't told them anything, particularly striking about this candidate that's going to push him over the top. And if I do the opposite, if I just say, well, this candidate is excellent because X, Y, and Z, well, yeah, I've talked about how great the candidate is, but the objection still stands, and I haven't addressed it. Address the objection, give them a reason to buy. Start them thinking about the positives of what you're trying to sell, and then try to close. Would you like to, you know, to set up an initial conversation with the candidate, see if he can demonstrate his strategy experience to you on an initial call? At the end of the day, that very structured response is one of the first, the fundamental building blocks of overcoming the psychological objections that people have as they're talking to you. And it's true in terms of, a sales pitch as well. One of the first things that you have to do is preemptively address what obvious concerns there might be but won't be voiced by the time you have a chance to address them, because you have a limited period of time to catch someone's attention. And then very quickly get beyond those objections and talk about the reasons why what you're selling, has a specific positive quality.
How do you like recruiting compared to your other jobs?
I love it. I'm having a lot of fun. The people that I'm talking to, there's a much stronger networking perspective here. You know, when I was in, the tech company, when I was working for Conduit, I would have my strategic partners and I would work with my partners, but it wasn't, in the sense where I might call these people, a couple of times a month just to talk about, specific strategic objectives I have and people they might be able to refer me to. With the candidate pool that I'm talking to and the client pool that I'm talking to, there's a general value in the relationship, and they all understand that by giving back to me in terms of the information that they have and the introductions that they're willing to make, they're feeding a system that ultimately benefits them on the back end as well.
I don't get it. So you're saying if they give you leads, they know they're helping themselves?
Absolutely.
How?
Not leads for the same job. In other words, understand that the way the recruiting world works is – I talked to a guy in a semiconductor company in New York, and he says to me, I don't have any openings right now, but I recognize the value in this candidate. Why don't you call my friend Jim at the semiconductor company in L.A.? He understands
that spontaneously. You don't have to pull his teeth to get it?
Well, I have to ask. You're never going to get any response you don't ask for.
What do you ask him?
Can you think of anyone who would like... First I talked to him about would he like to speak to the candidate. We're in a hiring freeze right now. Semis are down. Okay, can you think of someone who would like to, speak to a candidate with this, with this profile?
Well, that's like a bland, vanilla question, right?
It's a pretty bland question, but they answer it because they know that Jeff in L.A. is going to refer right back when he has an opening that Jeff can't, that Jeff's not filling.
Okay. Harry Joyner, you're online, aren't you?
Yeah.
You have a question for Noah?
No.
Do you have a challenge for Noah?
No.
Well, actually, Noah, I wanted you to talk to Harry after the show at some time because he also has clients, not candidates, who have their offices in remote areas, far more remote than yours. And he's told us a number of times that blogs serve them well as a way to promote that out-of-the-way locale. Am I right, Harry, yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that the Internet's reach can be improved on.
Okay. Anyway, actually, he's got a posting about that, Noah. I'll send it to you. Maureen, do you want to ask your question now? Maureen, are you still there?
I am. I'm here.
Ask your question. Speak up.
I was wondering how much, if at all, or if very much, he enjoyed sourcing.
Oh, I love sourcing.
Yeah?
The first... the way I got onto recruitingblogs.com was a friend sent me the blog post about the sourcing competition, and I joined to answer it.
We should say we met each other on recruitingblogs.com, J.D. Jason Davis's new recruiting networking site, correct?
Yep.
And Maureen and Steve Levy ran a contest on that site, yes?
Yep.
Okay, so go on from there. Somebody sent you an email.
Someone sent me a link to the blog post, went to recruitingblogs.com, saw the competition, signed up just to join the competition. I've been a fairly active member of the community ever since. But you know, sourcing is the fun part. It's like you know, when we were in high school, we all wanted to, well, maybe elementary school, call someone and say, is your refrigerator running? You know, go catch it. This is permission to prank people. Hello?
That's funny.
Now, what was your sourcing joke or your humorous sourcing anecdote that you entered the contest with?
Oh, I have a million names. And the names are typically famous people where, you know, they're generic enough that no one's going to call you on it. Like, you can't be Samuel L. Jackson. Who's calling Samuel L. Jackson? They will call you on it. But if they call and who's calling Sam Jackson, well, how many Sam Jacksons are there in the world? Probably a dozen, you know, at least. And if you can get that dumb enough, young enough, blonde enough secretary that she just wants to, you know, bubble over the top because this is a pop culture reference that you've just thrown at her. My favorite is Tom Green. He'll go, like in MTV? No, but I get that a lot. Is Mr. Jones in? It just sort of...
You call that sourcing? Sourcing is getting the names, not asking for them.
No, this occurs a lot of times later in the conversation. I understand that sourcing is getting the names. My point is that the game back and forth of who you are and why you're calling and what the point is, you know, when I first started in the sports marketing firm, one of our biggest things was we had internal rules, and you had to learn the internal rules. If it was a privately owned company, you wanted the owner. Unless it was, you know, a multi-regional company, or it was a public company, in which case you wanted the top person in the state in which the university was located, who reports to someone outside of a state bordering on that location. I mean, it was ridiculously complicated stuff, and we're sitting there. What's his name? What's his title? Who does he report to? Where is he located? Okay, what's his name? What's his title? Who does he report to? Where is he located?
So this was for your sales activities in an entirely different field. You were actually sourcing at the time. Is that right? Getting an order?
Absolutely. Our leads in the sports marketing firm were, here's the name of the company and here's the relationship to the university.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have a name. We didn't have a title. And we had our own definitions of who we had learned the decision maker would be.
Yeah.
And obviously the secretary wants to tell you who they think the decision maker would be. You know, they want to send you to the project manager for the university project or, you know, whatever else. And you've got to push them back in the direction of, you know, no,
how
listen,
do you do
I
that?
Know what I'm talking
give
about.
Give me a concrete about. Example. But Harry, I noticed you didn't speak up. Your wife is blonde. You should have got him for that, but another.
I'm blonde. I'm blonde. You haven't seen the picture?
Yeah, your picture. Okay. an example from that other business of how you got to where you wanted to go. Because I got to tell you something. This is very important for job hunters. They want to talk to the right person who's going to hire them. How do they find out?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, the biggest problem job hunters have is that they're, you know, they're scared to death of the phone. Most job hunters are not people who are cold callers by, you know, in their day-to-day lives. And the idea of picking up a phone and pushing through a company and finding the right guy and, oh, my God, what if they ask me my name? What if they go tell the decision-maker that I called and try to get his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then he'll be impressed that you had a little bit of initiative.
Yeah, but actually, here's the question. A job hunter calls in. He says, I'm Tom Green, right? He gets to use your technique. And she says, well, what do you want to call him for? What's he going to say? I'm looking for a job?
No. I mean, it depends on the situation. If it's feasible to speak to him about a job, you can do that. Listen, you can have a different name.
She's going to send you to HR.
Oh, I know she's going to.
What would you advise a job hunter in that situation?
Well, in many cases, you have to have a reason to speak to the person. Obviously, this is the generic. I just wanted to talk to him about a project I'm working on. That usually fails. depending on the specific circumstances, depending on the person's title in the company, right? You're looking for a job. You know, you're not going to call Microsoft and ask to speak with Mr. Gates. But
I'm laughing.
What?
Don't worry, I'm smiling.
the you want to create, prior to picking up the phone, a credible story, which is the reason why you're calling in.
Yeah.
Mr. Smith is an alum of MIT's MBA program, and I'm also a Sloan alum. I had wanted to touch base with him about some industry information.
Does that have to be true?
What?
Does it have to be true?
It doesn't have to be. Well, it from a sourcing perspective, that's beyond sourcing. That's where you already have the name.
Yeah, that's
at that point, you're in danger of getting onto the phone with the guy. And if the secretary says to him, John, who's an MIT alum, wants to speak to you about information, and then you get on the phone and say, just kidding about the MIT thing, you're in trouble.
Yeah, so the job hunter, you haven't solved this problem yet. I haven't heard an answer for you about that question. Because
I haven't really thought about it, extensively. My answer is there's always got to be a credible cover story before you pick up the phone,
uh-huh.
And I would never be in a situation to get put on the spot like this if I were a job hunter, because I would do the research and find the credible story before I did pick up the phone and try and get the guy on.
You know what? There's another easy way around that, though. You can call up at nighttime, leave a voicemail. Go through the directory. If you know who you're talking to, leave a voicemail. Right or wrong?
That works, but the response level I've found is a lot lower than actually catching them.
Yeah.
If you can get, how many people are gonna respond to a message from a stranger, even if there's a very clear proposition? It's a value proposition for you as the job seeker, and not necessarily a value proposition for him as the person already employed.
Yeah.
Whereas if you catch them on the phone, you have an opportunity to engage them, really make an impression, and potentially
do rebuttal.
As you said,
rebuttal
sell them.
The sales key. Is that what you said? Handling objections, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you said that Mitch Gibb, am I right about that name?
Gibbs
in New York is the guy who taught you about sales. Have you studied the works of any great recruiting teachers?
I have studied the works of the great Ted King. He is the founder of Hawks, Peers & Company.
Ted King. He's your partner.
He is my partner. Most of these methodologies pre-existed my coming to the firm. He brought me in to teach me about the recruiting business from a recruiting perspective and then to run the business from a management perspective. So as a recruiter, I've been on it 6 months. I've made my first couple of placements. I have several active searches in the pipeline.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm running out of time. What mistakes have you made in your career?
Oh, what mistakes haven't I made? How do you learn anything if you don't make a mistake? I've hung up prematurely. Until I had a couple of conversations, until I had under my belt a good sense of what.
What do you mean by that? Hung up prematurely.
Been on a conversation with a candidate or a client, and I'm talking very early stages, the first month, 6 weeks where I was on the phone, and I just hadn't had enough conversations under my belt to expect every objection I might hear and have my answer for it prepared. I've put myself in a position to be unable to respond effectively, and in many cases that's forced me to prematurely end a conversation with someone who now, a couple months later, I really believe I would have been able to turn.
Okay.
And that's something that's just an experience thing. It's a matter of, there's this only a limited amount that you can absorb quickly enough. And once you've seen enough reps, it's like, I don't know how many sports fans are watching, but a quarterback has to see the field on a number of plays a number of times to know what the defense is throwing at him. As a salesperson, not every sales call is the same. Every industry has slight nuances, information that you have to know, objections that are unique. And until you've just sort of done enough reps to see everything that the defense can throw at you, or, everything except the really unique things that the defense can throw at you, you're going to miss opportunity.
Well, don't you ever agree with somebody? This is not the position for her?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
but that's different than there was a good objection and I couldn't come up with it quickly enough on the phone because I wasn't prepared.
Okay. So sometimes it's just not a match.
Oh, absolutely.
From their point of view, not yours. Or is it always a match from your point of view? Are you the kind
no,
of recruiter I talk about? Are you the prophet who has to show them the way every single time?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I have never put a candidate in front of a client that I didn't believe matched based on what they told me they were looking for.
It's not what
I'm and I'm prepared to answer where I saw the match. And if they say, in many cases, the function there is not to convince them that candidate A is the right candidate. it's to hear their feedback to be prepared to find a more exact candidate for the next round.
You mean a trial balloon. What I'm talking about is a candidate who says, I'm not interested in that job. Do you always believe that you should talk that candidate into going out and taking a look at it? Or you say, yeah, you got what I need, but you're right, it's not for you.
It depends on what the candidate's objection is. If the candidate's objection is, you know, is professional, and I believe there's a professional match, of course I'm going to talk to him about why, you know, why I thought there was a match there. If a candidate, you know, if his wife's got a job in New York and the bump in salary he's about to get doesn't match his wife's highly specialized job that she can't replace in Boise, then he's got a good point.
Okay. Okay, what would you, anybody else want to say something? We're running low on time. I'd like to give the pros in the audience an opportunity. I take that as a no. What would you advise, Noah, anyone who wants to go into recruiting? Is there anything, is there any question I'm missing that I should be asking you that is a great learning you've had in the last few months?
The biggest thing I would tell someone who wants to go into recruiting is that it's a numbers game. You know, a lot of people, particularly if they don't necessarily have a sales background, they think I'm going to be less efficient and more effective. I'm going to touch less people, but I'm going to be better at the people I touch. And at the end of the day, your talent level probably has a pretty fixed closing ratio. And the more people that you touch, the more you're going to close. And I think a lot of people come into the business without really understanding the extent to which, you know, the 8, 10, 12, 20-hour days, I'm sorry, I have too much blood in my caffeine stream, are really a part of effectively, you know, getting to touch the most people so you have the most opportunities to close at your fixed closing ratio.
That's your closing statement?
That is my closing statement. Other than I love you, Recruiting Animal. I listen to the show every week, and I'm thrilled you gave me.
But you never make it past the first few minutes you told me. Anyway, have you heard about
the client's call? It's at noon on a business day.
Have you heard about SourceCon? I'm going to do some commercials. You can stay on. Have you heard about SourceCon?
No.
There's a sourcing show or sourcing event. Expo, trade show. It's going to be in Atlanta. I can't remember the date. Maureen, do you know? Maureen isn't answering. Maureen, we'll move on.
Yes, I'm here. SourceCon, I think, is September 11th.
September 11th. Uh-oh. Anyway, Sourcers Guild. Next, jimstroud.com is a place to find out about SourceCon. It's the only one. There's another site, but that's the one that comes to mind. Sourcers
Guild.
They're going
to put it in Vegas instead of Atlanta?
Pardon me? Vegas. Everything else is in Vegas. This is, I got to tell you, Atlanta is a hotbed of recruiting. Shally's there. Jim Stroud is there. Rob McIntosh is there.
Yeah, but I hate
Harry is there. Harry Joyner is there.
But Hartsfield-Jackson is a disaster. Who wants to fly into it?
I don't know anything about it. Never been there. Maureen Sharib, Sourcers Guild. Here's your chance. Make a plug.
Sourcers Guild is a professional organization forming for sourcers. You can find it on the Yahoo group Sourcers Guild. We will.
Give us a reason to buy, Maureen.
What?
Give us a reason to buy.
Well, you don't have to buy yet. You just have to join. And if you like it, you can buy later.
So that's sourcersguild.com. Is that right, Maureen?
That's no.
You better write this out before I ask you next time.
It will be sourcersguild.com.
And you're going to have code rings. I'll give you. They're going to have code rings and secret handshakes. And it sounds like a lot of fun.
No. They're doing that over on SourceCon. Sourcers Guild, we're all about open source sourcing.
Open sourcing. Okay, there's a lot of sourcers, I imagine, who like to stay underground. I mean, this is the recruiting underground sourcing. Anyway, I want to move on to my good friend David Bulldoza Mendoza. Everybody's saying to me, we're 6 degrees from Dave. We haven't heard from him. Well, he's been in Europe. He's been researching European recruiting techniques and the European scene. He's got a big series about it on 6degreesfromdave.com. Tiffany Bridge. Apparently, she left her site, Magic Pot of Job. She's a very funny woman. She is now doing recruiting stand-up in Washington, D.C. We'll give another plug to my friend J.D. Jason Davis at recruitingblogs.com. And next week, Louis Vong is on the show. Noah, do you know who Louis Vong is?
No.
You'll never forget that name, Vong, V-O-N-G. He's a guy from TMP who's in charge of Second Life. Have you heard of Second Life?
Yes.
Okay. So in the future, especially a guy like you who recruits from overseas in the semi-third world, you're going to take on a cartoon character and meet your clients and your candidates in cyberspace. He's at the leading edge of that movement or evolution or whatever you want to call it. We're coming out of time. Anything else to say? No. Right, Noah? I'm giving you the last word. I'm giving you the last word. Is that it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I enjoyed it, and I'm glad you let me come on.
How do you close off your business calls? You say goodbye,
bye.
Right? Goodbye, bye. Noah. Thank you very much.
I usually say thanks for hiring my guy.
Goodbye. Thank you.
See you later.